Hey, it's Saturday, January 13th, and this is Beginner's Puck, the podcast for hockey fans both new and old. Erica.
Hey.
You have a new Olympic hockey team.
I do.
I'm saying that you, as collective Canadian,
you. Well, you know what? You can say me as an Albertan, because apparently over a quarter of the team is from Alberta originally.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yep. I saw that.
A quarter, 25%.
I saw that stat go by on Twitter today, and I was like, yeah, baby.
You're like living hockey town there. Mm-hmm. So did you get a chance to like kind of poke at any of the players? Do you have any feel for these guys? Because you have been such a staunch supporter of the let's not have any NHL players in the Olympics. Let's bring all these other guys, give them another shot. So did you get a chance to kind of poke at the roster a little bit and say, huh, that could be fun?
I didn't really get a chance to do that yet. But my knowledge of hockey players, the breadth of my knowledge is much, much more slender than yours is to start with. So the chances of me actually recognizing any of their names was so slim that I didn't even, like, I'm looking at the list now and, oh, Rob Klinkhammer. I actually know one of them. Okay. Hooray. Yeah, that may be it. That may be the only one. Oh, and Carl Stollery, who is from Camrose, which is Stevens, my spouse's hometown.
Oh, very cool. I'm going to be honest. I kind of looked at them a little bit, didn't recognize any names. I tend to be a hockey generalist, but my knowledge is broad yet shallow for things that are very much in recent memory because, you know, haven't been watching hockey that long.
Oh, I just got to the bottom of the list. I had, and I knew this before, Ben Scrivens. I knew that it was likely he was going to be one of the goalies. And he was the goalie for Edmonton for a long time. And I love him. I don't care that he started being not so great and they traded him away. I love Ben Scrivens. I will always love Ben Scrivens. So, you know.
That is a name that did sound familiar to me as I was going through.
His wife, Jenny, I think it's Jenny, also hockey goalie.
That's why I know the name.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I knew the name because of his wife. Wow. All right.
Yep.
So it's her husband. Isn't that nice that he made the team?
Yeah. Isn't that cute?
That is adorable.
He's the husband of a great hockey player.
Yeah. Good for him. Mm-hmm. You're doing great, sweetie.
Yep.
Keep playing that hockey. Now, I think the difference, and I was reading something today, that the biggest difference between the U.S. Olympic hockey team and the Canadian Olympic hockey team is you guys are heavy on KHL players. Like, you went right over there and snatched them all up and brought them back. And I'm just wondering whether we just don't have that many players playing in the KHL or, you know, I hate to say it, but traditionally Canada has a higher quality, higher caliber of generally of hockey.
It's just, players? It's baked into There's the fabric of everything, of every part of life here. So, you know, it just makes sense.
Yeah, we don't have that.
Also, things are frozen a lot of the year. So, you know, it's easy to go out and play hockey on surfaces, just, you know, in general.
That's true. I guess I can say that.
It is currently minus 28 outside right now. So that's
people shouldn't live like that.
Yeah. It was colder when I walked home from work.
That does not sustain human habitation. I think it's like 62 here. We're having a freakishly warm day, and then tomorrow's going to plummet again. The one thing that I did that was sort of one of the heartwarming stories, because each of these teams has had sort of a really adorable, heartwarming thing. And for the U.S. Olympic team, you had the AHL player that went viral. There was a little video of him telling his dad that he made the team. And it was like, oh, it was like hugs and tears. It was great. And I have been seeing a lot about the member of Team Canada whose name I am going to butcher, but it's Wojciech Wolski. Who broke his neck in 2016 playing hockey.
Whoa.
And there's been lots of things all over social media in the past couple of days, like pictures of him like laying in the hospital, sort of giving a thumbs up. And I think he posted something on Instagram about like just the journey and how proud he is to be representing Canada and coming back from that kind of injury. So, you know, it's all about the narrative. You know, NBC Sports is going to be having a slow-mo, dreamy landscape kind of thing. You're talking about these players because that's all NBC does during the Olympics here in the States, and it just makes me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Just watch the dang game. So, yeah.
Yeah, and you get them time shifted too, which just seems very strange to most people in Canada.
It's our Olympic coverage has been terrible. I think ever since the Olympics went to Japan, I think is kind of when they decided that we can package the Olympics into bits and bytes and sell little Olympic nuggets where, you know, I remember being young and just the Olympics were on all day long. You know, it was just, it's Olympic time. That's all that was there. And you would just turn on the channel and there'd be something going and it might be a sport that you had absolutely, something you'd never even heard of. but you were just riveted by it. But now it's very carefully packaged commercial bits of the Olympics. You get highlights of things and then you get lots of personal stories. And I'm a sucker for a good personal story and a narrative, but it's overdone. It's really overdone.
Yeah. And I feel like I'm baffled by the idea that in this day and age, when we live in a world of social media and globalization of media and news and stuff, that, you know, tape delaying basically is just doesn't seem like a smart thing. I mean, you know, for a few important things here and there, but like to present it as if nobody knows what the outcome is just seems stupid to me because everybody's going to know.
And it's all about the money, you know? And the International Olympic Committee is fierce.
Oh yeah.
With their copyright materials.
Oh, yes.
Like there you could only I remember even during the London Games, the Summer Games, broadcasters, you could give the results, but I think you could only use a 5-second clip of something. They weren't allowing you to use any video content. Any news media was not allowed to use any video content whatsoever. I still remember the dust up they had over. Okay, talk about breadth of experiences here. I knit, you knit too.
Yep.
We're knitters, and I belong to Ravelry. And every year, Ravelry, which is it's a huge knitting website, sort of a cross between a repository of patterns and community. It's just if you knit, you know Ravelry. But every year they hold a thing. They used to call them the Ravelympics. And they would hold a giant event during the Olympics that had, you would form a team or join a team, and your team would compete in the Olympics. And you would compete with knitted objects. And they had like really cute names for each category. So you might have the sweater bobsled or something where you would knit a sweater and you could get a medal if you finished your sweater during the Olympics. You couldn't cast on until opening ceremonies and you had to stop at closing ceremonies. And the Olympic Committee came after them for using the term Ravelympics.
Oh my goodness.
And
that's
it made
ridiculous.
I know the you know, New York Times got in on the story. It was they felt that they were co-opting, they were inappropriately using the brand. There would be, you know, brand confusion and everything. So now it's called the Ravelinic Games and they still hold them. It's
brand
a lot of
confusion.
Fun.
I am going to get my needles mixed up with that
yes.
guy running the 100-meter dash.
You were diluting the brand, I think. The cease and desist letter was ridiculous, but yeah.
Okay.
Olympic Committee, man. Mm-hmm. There's something else. But it's coming up. I'm excited. I love the Olympics. I love the spectacle of it. I wish I could just watch physically more of the Olympics rather than Olympic nuggets. Nuggets aren't good for you. I want the full banquet. What else exciting happened this week? A new podcast came out that we both love.
The 31 Thoughts podcast. With my
like
two of my favorite, well, actually, like when I first moved to Canada, as I have said on the podcast before, my first love when it came to hockey commentators was Bob McKenzie. And he started his own podcast like, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years ago now, which I have been listening to faithfully ever since. And then after watching Bob for a while, I started to branch out and noticed more people. And sure enough, my other two favorites have now started a podcast together. I couldn't be happier.
I know. So it's Elliot Friedman and Jeff Marek. And I said this on Twitter, but Jeff Marek was sort of one of my inspirations for this podcast because he's always been commentators can fall into a couple different tropes. And, you know, they can be, you know, sort of very bro-y and very backslappy and in-jokey and Hockey Central, I'm looking at you. They can be, there's an assumption of knowledge by some of them that it can be a little esoteric at times. And Jeff Marek was always one of those voices in hockey that would periodically stop what he was saying, roll it back, and explain. So you really always felt that you were a part of that conversation.
And welcomed.
And welcomed. And as a new hockey fan, like, I really appreciated that, because when I first started listening to hockey podcasts and really intently listening to commentary, I understood only a portion of it, I'll be honest, because it was, everything was new. Everything was brand new. And I always felt his voice was very welcoming. And I remember in particular, there was people were talking about the expansion market with the Vegas Golden Knights, and they were talking about Nashville. And, you know, this was in the early days of the expansion and before the draft. And they were talking about when Nashville, the first season in Nashville, that it was such a new market that they had to, and I think we talked about this in the podcast, they actually gave out headsets and they would have commentary for the people in the arena to sort of explain what they were going on. Mm-hmm. And the hockey world was a little dismissive of this and derisive about it, because, like, why do they even have a franchise if they don't know what hockey is? And he was like, no, that was a great thing that they did, because this is your future. You want to build your sport. Isn't mm-hmm. it great they took that extra step? I hope Vegas does similar outreach, whether they need to do it to that level or not. So he's not a, no gatekeeping.
Yes, hear, hear.
At all. And I've also seen a lot of women in hockey media commend him for the opportunities that he gave them.
That's great.
That just makes my heart pitter-patter. The opportunities and, you know, saying, hey, why don't we do this with this person, or helping women in hockey media out, because that can be a tough gig. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, good dude. And Elliot Friedman is just smart.
He's so smart.
Just knowledgeable, and just, again, he's not as warm and welcoming to me as Jeff Marek mm-hmm. is, but now that I understand more about hockey, like, I really appreciate his commentary. Mm-hmm. So.
And he doesn't take himself too seriously, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
He will laugh at anything, including himself. And that is an endearing trait for a fella on TV.
And there was also an unexpected consequence of the announcement of this, because Craig Custance, who is normally another hockey voice that I really admire, did an article in The Athletic about 31 Thoughts. And in it, he said, you know, this podcast is joining the esoteric world of hockey podcasts, and listed a bunch of hockey podcasts, which are all good podcasts, and I listened to many of them. But not one of them were led by females or co-hosted by women in hockey podcasting. And he got clapped back pretty hard initially, and he admitted it, that he should have done better. And he actually edited the article to include, I think it was Deep in the Heart podcast, which is a Dallas Stars hockey podcast run by two women.
Cool.
And he said in the comments, you know, hey, do you know any more? Throw them in here. And people immediately jumped on and started recommending women-led podcasts. And somebody very nicely recommended us. And I made this lovely little list of all the podcasts that I now want to listen to. and they really run the breadth and scope of podcasting, which is, you know, that's the way podcasting should be. So there's there's some that are very specific to teams. I mean, obviously, like Broad Street Hockey has two female co-hosts as well as male hosts on that, is a Flyer-centric one. Thanks, Bud. THK Bud is an LA Kings podcast. There's Comedy Podcast, which is Shut Your Five Hole, which we've talked about here, and Garbage Fire Pod, which is another sort of general funny one that's very amusing. It just made me realize that, you know, we still have a lot of work to do to get more diverse voices in hockey, but There's voices out there. So I created a little list, and I'm going to actually include this in our show notes this week as sort of a resource. And I would love to add more names to this, because I know it's not comprehensive. And these are just the ones that I was gleaning from the Twitter comments to that article, and sort of a call out. I think you actually on our Beginner's Puck Twitter feed jumped in and said, hey, shout out.
Hockey Feels.
Yeah. Hockey Feels is one, definitely, with Rachel co-hosting with Steven.
Yeah, there's a lot. It is a big tent, and I think that it is so much more interesting to hear a variety of different viewpoints on hockey. Because, you know, while yes, all of these white guys are very knowledgeable on hockey, they are coming from a pretty specific point of view. And while they don't always agree with each other, it is, I think, for me, at least as a listener, vastly more interesting to hear people from different places with different backgrounds give their take on things. So it's nice that there are so many more of us out there doing that thing.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Diversity is not a huge thing in hockey in general.
Yet.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of diversity in hockey, there's something, all right, I don't know. It could just be me. It could be my heightened viewpoint, but I just want to get your perspective on this. Ooh. So this week, Anthony Duclair of the Arizona Coyotes was traded to Chicago. Right now, as we are recording this, the Arizona Coyotes are playing the Oilers.
Mm-hmm,
it's
yeah.
not going so well for you
guys. At this point, they're winning. Hey, the Oilers at least have scored now, so I feel a little better about the world.
Hey, excellent. And there was... Anthony Duclair is one of those players who was, you know, bright young prospect, has had ups and downs for whatever reasons that we're not quite sure about, much like the Arizona Coyotes themselves. But apparently, he had requested a trade, and Chicago is in a financial bind when it comes to their cap space. So I think they're trying to be creative with what they can do in the cheap. So they picked him up. And the GM, the Arizona GM, was saying, you know, he requested a trade and things, you know, he's a good player, he's a great player. There's some issues here, there's some issues there. You know, there's some things that are better left, that are better kept private. So mm-hmm. everybody's talking about we all know he has off-ice issues. And I'm like, all right, you know, okay, I can see that. But I'm thinking of all the players that I have heard who have offside, and I'm air quoting this, mm-hmm. off-ice issues, like this year alone. There was Anthony Duclair was now one. There was Josh Hosang. Evander Kane has been all over the news with his off-ice issues. And last year was PK Subban being a disruptive force and having issues. And I'm thinking, what do all these players have in common? Because I really haven't heard any other players mentioned with off-ice issues. And maybe I'm just looking at this in a very narrow scope, but I listen to a lot of hockey commentary and I read a lot about hockey. And I'm not hearing off-ice issues used a lot, but I've heard them about these players. Aww. Who are all not white.
Interesting.
So, and again, I don't know if I'm putting too narrow a focus on this, but from an outsider looking in, it just caught my, it just, I was thinking about that today.
That is fascinating. Like I said, my knowledge of hockey players and teams and what's going on with them is not as deep as yours. So I haven't heard a lot of people talking about off-ice issues. There's certainly like nobody on the Oilers right now that I've heard anybody kind of talking in that way about. And honestly, like when it comes to the Oilers, the only person who jumped into my head for that was Zach Kassian. And that was, he had off-ice issues long ago, well before he came to the Oilers, and he has, you know, turned his life around and cleaned things up and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I mean, that phrase also gets used when players have any kind of legal controversy going on mm-hmm. around them. Patrick Kane. But yeah, so this, like, specifically speaking of this year, I do find that a little suspect that those are the only players that are being talked about in that way. Because I wonder, is it really just them? Or are those the people that get focused on? Who knows? Who knows? But yeah. I'm going to pay more attention in the future and just sort of just see.
And again, it's not something that I even picked up on until I'm like, wow, this is one of the fourth players that I've heard about having sort of off-ice controversies. And Evander Kane was kind of, there was all sorts of legal things going on with him too. Like, yeah. I'm not saying that any of these guys don't deserve that label, but they're the mm-hmm. only ones who have that label. And I'm just like, are they put under a tighter microscope maybe? Or, mm-hmm. you know, people bring a lot of inherent biases into that they carry with them when they may not even realize it. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, and totally.
Yeah, do those players get looked at a little bit differently?
Yeah, and I mean, is it like, you know, women in the workplace having to work twice as hard to be seen as half as good? And then, you know, buckling under the pressure of all of that, that's certainly a possibility.
It could be. Anyway, I'd love to hear what our listeners think about this, because it's something, like I said, I didn't give it much thought until today, and I was listening to some commentary about the trade. Oh, wouldn't it be nice if things weren't complicated?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. Oh, other exciting thing that happened this week, All-Star Game announcements. This Your boy is captain.
Yep.
Like, you sound so excited about that.
Well, you know, things aren't going great right now. And I'm thrilled that the world wants to see Connor McDavid in the All-Star game. There's no question that he's one of the most talented players in the National Hockey League. But he's still so young, and he's still such a Canadian hockey robot that it's like, yeah, I would love to see him just go and relax and have a good time. But so far, I don't think too many people have seen Connor McDavid relaxed and having a good time and like showing his actual personality. And now with the Oilers being in the straits that they are in, I think the chances of that happening are even smaller. So from a sheer entertainment value, like point of view, like, yes, you will get the entertainment of watching Connor McDavid be awesome at, you know, like being speedy and fast and whatever. But when it comes to being silly and sort of letting your hair down, I guess if I weren't going to be playing Dungeons and Dragons when the All-Star game was on, whoops, that was a scheduling error on my part. Damn. But so if I were going to be watching, I guess I would just hope against hope that he was going to suddenly just be like a relaxed human being. But that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
Because hockey. The NHL likes its hockey players to be upstanding, polite, I don't want to say not well-spoken, underspoken individuals. And it's hard to break out of that, especially when there's so much focus on you in the media like there is for poor old Connor McDavid.
Yeah, they want all the personalities sandpapered off.
Yeah. Yeah,
they want them to be like those emojis.
They play
the
lip
little
service.
Emoji people.
They play lip service to wanting personality, and yet that's not really what the corporate overlords actually want.
Nope. It seems. Soon as you show some personality, Mike Milbury's there to tell you it's disgraceful.
Right? Yeah, he's just jealous because he doesn't have a personality.
He does. It's just terrible.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
Well, there was also a little bit of tragic news. Well, first of all, Tampa Bay is the All-Star game is going to be held in Tampa this year. And Tampa Bay, who is like leading the league, they're on fire. Mm-hmm. Number one team in the league as we speak, has their coach is the coach of the Atlantic Division, and they had four players assigned to the All-Star game or picked for the All-Star game. Now this is including their captain Steven Stamkos, who was named the captain for the Atlantic Division. And the big debate that I had been listening to before this announcement was, you know, like, how do you narrow this down? Because of the 3-on-3 format, you have to have enough forwards, enough defensemen, you have to have enough goalies on each team.
Right.
So you're leaving, you know, you're leaving players on the table who are, should definitely be all-stars, but you just can't fit them in because of the format of the game. So, but yesterday, Victor Hedman took a nasty hit to the knee, to the leg, and is out for some time, like up to 6 weeks. Yeah. Like there was thoughts that it was a broken leg and it was a season-ending career. But the news today was he's only going to be out for 6 weeks. So now there's an open slot in the Atlantic Division because he was an all-star selection. So that should be interesting who they're going to put in there in place of. Mm-hmm. So it's a tough list. I don't envy anybody that had to make this up, because how do you narrow it down? I don't know. It's like playing hockey Jenga.
I like that idea of hockey Jenga because, yeah, like, you know, it's got to be balanced. Otherwise, it's just going to fall everywhere.
Exactly. So, and well, I'm going to leave that to the end because I have a really interesting really interesting what the puck for this week, but I'm going to leave that on the end. But before we jump into bye weeks, because we're coming off one and you're getting ready to go on one.
Yes.
What's been capturing you in hockey this past week?
I'm just trying to stay positive.
Well, you've had some reffing issues.
Oh, yes.
You were a little ranty.
Yeah, that has been really eating into my ability to stay positive. It started with a conversation at work that I had. I have a coworker, and she and I talk, she's a huge Oilers fan. She and I talk about hockey a lot. And a couple of weeks back, she was telling me that her husband is a Maple Leafs fan, so they have a mixed marriage, and they somehow managed to make it work. But, you know, he doesn't watch a lot of Oilers games with her. She doesn't watch a lot of Leafs games with him. But he was watching an Oilers game with her, and it may have been a couple of games, actually. And he just kept turning to her and saying, "Oh my God, I cannot believe how many calls are missed by the refs against the Oilers." He's like, "How can you stand this? How can you stand to watch this? I just don't believe it." Because apparently that doesn't happen to the Leafs in quite the same way that it does to the Oilers. So I had always sort of been of the thought that, you know, reffing's a super hard job. Things are happening very fast. You know, there are things and people flying at you at a moment's notice. So yeah, you're not going to catch everything. It's a tough thing. And I just sort of assumed that every team's fans thought that they had the worst of it, that it was just them. But then my coworker's husband came along and was like, "No, this is not normal. This is not the way it usually goes." So I decided to start paying attention. And that was like close attention. And that was a mistake, people. That was a huge mistake, because now, yeah, I'm noticing it. I'm a new enough hockey fan that I don't always automatically just in watching catch when there is something that probably should have been a hook. Oh, that probably should have been holding. That was totally a trip. Like, unless I'm paying attention and focusing on noticing that sort of thing, a lot of that stuff will slide by. Well, when you try to notice it, guess what? You see a lot of it. And there were a couple of examples in this, actually not even a couple, there's more than a couple, in the Oilers game the other night. And I just kept sending still shots and GIFs to poor Deb and complaining in our hockey Slack channel, because there was a moment when Connor McDavid was on, it wasn't actually a breakaway, because PK Subban's stick was literally wrapped around his stomach, and he's just skating along, pulling PK Subban behind him until PK finally dropped his stick like halfway through the zone. Nobody called it. All the announcers, even the national announcers in between, in the midst of intermissions, were kind of like, "Huh, that's not a hook, huh?" And then there was a very blatant trip that was right behind the goal, and then there was thing after thing after thing it's just like, yeah, I can understand missing a few things here and there, but when it's so many and all in one game, it makes it very like, it honestly, I was thinking of just stopping watching hockey for a good long time, because what's the point? Like, if you're not going to be able to play the game and you're going to be held back in a way that the other team is not, because we got penalties called on us for some pretty wishy-washy stuff, I just want to reach out my hands to all of our listeners, because I know you've all felt this way too, and say you're not alone, especially if you're a new hockey fan. This is something you're going to have to get used to, is missed calls by the refs. It's a thing that happens. And I wish that there was something that we could do to make it better. Maybe there is. If there is, tweet me. I'll do it. But yeah, it was a very rough week. I had almost actually blocked all of that out because I was so, so mad about it. It was affecting my life.
Oh, man. And that was that was the game that had that, like, really dodgy offside call too, wasn't it, with the coach's review?
Well, actually, no, the call was correct. I mean, as a matter of fact, as soon as they crossed the blue line into the zone and then scored, I immediately turned to Steven and said, "They're gonna call that back. It was offside," because I could see that Jujhar Khaira got across the blue line a little too fast, and I just had this bad feeling. And sure enough, when they showed a camera angle, the current rules in the NHL for offside are that the entirety of the puck has to go across the blue line before any player does. And now, if you are somebody like Jujhar Khaira, who has 1 foot on either side of the blue line, if your back foot is still on the ice, that you, it counts as straddling the blue line and you haven't officially crossed the blue line yet. If your back foot is in exactly that same position behind the blue line, but it's a half an inch off the ice, if it's raised and not in contact with the ice's surface, that counts as having entirely crossed the blue line, because there's no part of you that's on the ice on the other side of the blue line. And I think that is the stupidest rule ever. I have railed against this ever since the day that I learned what it was. And yeah, the idea of offside makes sense, because you don't want to give an unfair advantage to somebody, like, you know, getting across the blue line and just waiting for the puck. But this is the difference of having your toe down on the ice or a half an inch off the ice. What kind of advantage does that give to a player? None. That's what. None. So I hate this rule. I hate it so much. But I'm not complaining about the call itself, because according to the NHL's rules as they stand, yep, that play was definitely offside and it was the right thing to do to call that goal back. I just think that the rule itself is stupid and should die in a fire.
You are not alone. I have not heard anybody who loves the offside rule. No one. Absolutely no one. In fact, I was listening to Hockey Central, and it might have been Nick Kyprios. I don't remember, because it sounds like a Nick Kyprios thing to say. he said, like, if you need high-def cameras to determine whether it was offsides, it's a dumb rule. Like, if the ref is right totally. There and doesn't call it, if the ref is literally in front of you and does not call it offsides, and you need a high-def camera to determine if it is offsides or not, then there is something wrong with this rule. So, it is loathed.
It's just dumb.
Thanks, Nate McKinnon.
So. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's interesting that most of the rules changes that we see go in and out in hockey in the NHL are because something happened. And often it's because something happened that was a game determiner or made a really big difference, and everybody freaked out, so then they made a new rule. And sometimes that new rule makes sense and is a good thing, and sometimes they don't really think through all the consequences.
Right. And the thing is, like, once a rule's in place, like, how do you take the rule back? And this is another discussion I've been seeing. And the conversation was, well, the NHL tried to do that this year by making it a penalty if you call for a review. And it's actually a valid, it's a valid goal. Or so if you call for a coach's review and you're wrong.
You're wrong.
Mm-hmm. You get an automatic penalty. So that's, like, supposed to be a deterrent. But I don't know.
It's still, like, a stupid rule. It doesn't make the rule any less stupid.
No, it's not. So, So do you feel better now that you got that off your chest?
A little bit. Sometimes you just need to rant. That is another thing that I think that's not just hockey fans. That's fans of anything everywhere. But
it's true. But it feels pretty good, doesn't it?
It does. You just gotta tell the world how stupid some things are, and then you feel a little bit better. Just a little bit, though.
There you go. All right. So I wanted to talk. I've been doing a little bit of research on bye weeks because, like I said, we're finally coming back. It's been a little slow. You may have noticed, listeners, that there's only been half as many hockey games this week because half of the teams are in Cabo. So according to Instagram, many of them are in Miami, apparently. They all like to go someplace warm, except for Chris Letang, who went to Canada for his bye week. And I think Claude Giroux, but they're getting married, so they probably went back to do wedding things. Chris Letang isn't. He's already married, but Claude Giroux is getting married. So, but yeah, everybody else went to Mexico, Miami, and sat on the beach or fished someplace. So I'm like, well, what is this bye week thing? What is going on about the bye week? And then there's the All-Star announcement. And I learned all sorts of exciting things, administrivia things about hockey. So, Erica, why don't we learn something new about hockey?
It's time for What the Puck, the things that everyone knows, but we all had to learn it sometime. So, Deb, What the Puck is a bye week?
A bye week. A bye week is a beautiful thing. A bye week, unless you're a hockey fan, if you're a hockey player, the bye week is a beautiful thing. It's basically, you just get a week off. You get a week's vacation. Actually, it's like 5 days. You get 5 days in which you are not required to play hockey. That means your team cannot say you have to come in for practice. You have to do conditioning training. It is basically hands off. You get to go do whatever you would like for 5 days in the middle of the season. And I thought, well, gosh, you know, that kind of makes sense because, you know, there's like, what, 81 games in a hockey season? Like, that's really, that's hard on your body. And if you're going into postseason, like, you even have more games on top of that. So you could be worn pretty thin come June. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's kind of, I can see, you know, everybody needs a vacation. That's kind of a cool thing. Well, it turns out it's a relatively new thing that came about due to the All-Star Game.
Yep.
So there's this wonderful document that is available in a PDF format on the interwebs called the Collective Bargaining Agreement. And the Collective Bargaining Agreement is an agreement that was made between the NHL and the NHL Players Association, which is like the players' union. And in this document, there is all of the minutia that is required to be a hockey player. And as far as what meals need to be provided to you on game days and when you are required to travel and how much money you have to get per day as a per diem going when you're on the road. If you get traded, how many first class tickets do you get? What are your accommodations like when you get traded? It is a fascinating piece of hockey stuff. And if you are me who just likes information and wants to know how the sausage is made, this is a really fun place to kind of dig in a little bit. But I was reading up about the bye week, and it seems that there's every time something changes in the world of hockey, the NHLPA is involved in the negotiation of it. And the All-Star Game format itself has changed a lot since it was initiated. And there was all sorts of things that they used to do that they don't do now. And one of the things that they used to do was they would have a game, like just a you know, sort of an Eastern Western Conference game. They would do a fantasy draft. So you would draft your team kind of thing. They would do sort of a goofy skills challenge where people would a shootout kind of thing where people would dress up. And it used to be kind of fun, actually. And they've managed to wipe a lot of the fun out of the game. and one of the ways is they negotiated to get rid of the fantasy draft because the players all hated that because who wants to be picked last, even though you did get a car if you got to pick last. And then they wanted to change the format to a 3-on-3 format with four teams, one in each division. So our current all-star roster of an Atlantic, a Metro Pacific, and a Central division are all sort of in the past 2 years, I think. Mm-hmm. So in order to negotiate this new format, this agreement, it all came around the same time that they were talking about reinvigorating the World Cup of Hockey. So the NHLPA came in and said, all right, well, we'll do this, but this is what we want in return. We want this extra week. And the NHL says, all right, we can do that. So there's actually stipulations in the collective bargaining agreement about the All-Star Game, including the bye week is not in there because the collective bargaining agreement happened before all of these other things. That's sort of an addendum that is something that has been negotiated since then. It's not technically part of the collective bargaining agreement. But there's the bonuses are laid out in the collective bargaining agreement, which I think is interesting. So everybody knows, like, the winning team now gets $1 million to split amongst themselves. And if you're named the MVP, you get extra money. But you actually just get a bonus for being named to the All-Star team. And there's all sorts of little financial nuggets sprinkled throughout the All-Star game. So it's not only an honor to be named, it's also financially lucrative to be named. So the thing that was such a juggernaut this year is there's all sorts of stipulations about what the NHL has to allow players to do when it comes to playing in tournaments and international play, including there's information in there about insurance and who's going to cover the travel costs and all sorts of things. The language about the Olympics is sort of a little a little more wishy-washy, and it's basically there shall be no all-star. I think it's there will be no all-star game in a year that the NHL elects to attend the Olympics. Mm-hmm. Not, there's no language in there saying players should be permitted to go to the Olympics, which is one of the big, was one of the big bargaining things that was happening last year when they were trying to work out the finances of sending the NHL team to the Olympics. And the NHL came back at one point and said, you know, if you extend the collective bargaining agreement because it's up for renegotiation in a few years, then we'll let you guys go. And they're like, well, we don't want to do that because there's things in the collective bargaining agreement that we're going to want to renegotiate. So it's a big old twisted knot mm-hmm. of administrivia. But basically, it comes down to the NHL wanted a different format. The NHLPA wanted some time off because they knew they were also had this tournament coming up and they felt that players needed a little bit more time. And they just keep doing it. They're just now they give now you get a bye week. Last year, it was more staggered. This year, they're doing it in bigger. They're only doing it sort of in chunks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm interested to see sort of how that turns out differently, because I know last year there were a lot of teams who came off that bye week and were rusty.
Yeah.
And it ended up not being a great thing for many teams, the Oilers included. And this year, I think it's interesting that they have chosen to sort of clump up the bye weeks so much, because, you know, before you'd have a team coming back from a week off and having not, you know, played or practiced too much for a while. And then the team that they're playing could be somebody that's, you know, in the middle of a 7-game road trip. So they're just totally warmed up. This time, there's a greater chance that it's somebody who, you know, if they haven't just come off of a bye week, maybe they've been playing many, many games and they're about to get their bye week. Or, you know, maybe it's somebody who's only had one game since their bye week. So I want to see if the deck is stacked as strongly as it seemed to be a little bit last year.
Yeah, it seems to me this is a better system. It meant that we were hockey light, or we're going to be hockey, and we're going to be hockey light again when the next wave of teams go on. But, you know, you have a team that's warmed up and is on a streak, and you're coming off a bye week, and you still have a little bit of tequila in your system. You know, it just doesn't seem fair to pit those teams against each other. You know, you got to let the car idle a little bit before you hit 60.
So. Yeah. For example, like on the other end as well. So tomorrow is the Oilers' last game before their bye week. They are playing in Las Vegas, and it is also the 21st birthday of one Connor McDavid. So, I know some Oilers fans who have pretty much written off tomorrow's game because, yeah, like they're not on the bye week yet, but they're in Vegas. So automatically, you know, there's a statistically lower chance of them winning simply because Vegas just wins at home. That's what they do. And also, everybody just, I'm sure they're just going to want to take out their team captain and just get him absolutely bezasted for his 21st birthday. Although it's worth pointing out that most places in Canada, the drinking age is 18. So it's not like this is as big a deal for him because he is Canadian. But still, it's Vegas, baby. So
on your 21st
we'll
birthday, like,
yeah.
Did
and
NHL...
They, and then it's a bye week.
Did the NHL look at that and say, guess what we're doing to the Oilers this year?
Yeah, my coworker, who I mentioned earlier, she has a conspiracy theory that Connor McDavid, at some point before the season started, put his foot down and was like, I'm not going to sign with you Oilers unless you arrange it so I get to have my 21st birthday when we're in Vegas.
Oh my God.
I'm like, I think that's a bit too far for me to go conspiracy theory wise, but it made me laugh.
See, I don't see Connor McDavid as the type of person that...
I don't either.
He's so robot-y. I can't imagine him doing that. I can see like the NHL saying, wouldn't this be hysterical if we did this? But no, that's giving too much credit to the NHL too, because they don't like personality. Don't want any off-site.
It's probably just
issues.
Like one girl in the scheduling office was like, ooh, dink. I'm going to make this happen because this would be hilarious. And you go, girl.
Yes. Okay. You know, Deadspin's going to be all over this. It should be amusing. It should be entertaining. Ah. So anyway, that is all I discovered about the bye week and how tangled up it all is with the collective bargaining agreement and the All-Star Game and the World Cup of Hockey. My gosh, you pull a string. You pull one little string and you unravel the whole scarf. But
oh, what a tangled web we weave.
I know. See, and I didn't even go into the strike or any of that kind of stuff or to the lockout. I restrained myself because let me tell you about this collective bargaining agreement. I adore it. You can go and you can search for things and you're like, really?
You are the biggest nerd I know.
Oh my gosh. It's see, I like to know. I like to know these things. Everybody can see what happens on the ice. Nobody sees what happens behind the curtains. But the collective bargaining agreement does. So, all right, Erica, why don't you close us out with a hockey tidbit?
I would be happy to. My hockey tidbit actually is going to fly in the face of several of the things that I said in this podcast. My hockey tidbit is about Connor McDavid. It is specifically a television commercial starring Connor McDavid. And I will tell you, yeah, most television commercials starring Edmonton Oilers are wretched. They're just awful. These boys are hockey boys. They are not actors. They are not spokespeople. They're hockey boys. And that's fine. But I do think that in the right circumstances, they can be amazing. If you use these players, you know, as characters in these commercials in the right way, it can work. And there is one single commercial that has achieved this yet that I have seen with Connor McDavid. He's in a lot of commercials, let me tell you.
I think I know which one you're talking about, but I'm waiting to hear if it is.
It's for the NHL Shop.
Yes.
Yep. And it's a kind of a schlubby middle-aged white dude in a cubicle, and Connor McDavid is standing behind him in his gear, in his you know, hockey gloves, holding a piece of paper and, like, you know, talking back and forth to this guy. And the guy is buying an Oilers onesie for his baby. And the conversation between Connor McDavid and this guy, just, it seems like two people talking to each other. So I don't know if it is putting Connor McDavid at ease because he gets to be in his hockey gear, if it's a really good director, if it's the fact that instead of reading into a camera, he's actually interacting with another human being and they're talking back and forth to each other and this is a good actor. But Connor McDavid seems like just a guy that I would want to hang out with. And the best part of the commercial is at the end where the guy is... you know, he's buying this onesie and Connor McDavid says, you know, thanks for making another Oilers fan for us. And the guy says something to the effect of, well, maybe I'll go home and try to make another one. And Connor McDavid goes, too personal, man. And his delivery of that line, too personal, is perfect. It is not robotic, but it is deadpan. And it sounds like Connor McDavid saying normal Connor McDavid words. So it is a glorious moment. And it makes me happy every time I see that commercial.
I love that. There's a whole series of those. Have you seen any of the other ones?
I haven't because I pretty much lately have only watched Oilers games.
Okay.
But I'll send you a link to this commercial because I managed to find it online.
Yeah, there's a whole series of them. And basically what the producers of this have realized is that hockey players are terrible actors. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do is we're going to give them the script and then just have them read the script in their deadpan hockey voices.
Yep.
And so it's like, okay, I can totally see you being really awkward and reading the script as it is written because this is the script that I have in my hand right now. And it's always a fan who's about to purchase something from the Fanatics website. And so you, as they're looking at this thing they're about to buy, the hockey player of the thing who's representing the thing that they're going to buy, like, pops up and reads this little pitch for them to get it. And then there's always a cute little sting at the end. So Patrick Kane, he does one. Marc-Andre Fleury does one. Tyler Seguin does one.
Is the Marc-Andre Fleury one, like, in a coffee shop?
Yes.
Yes. I have seen that, and it is super cute.
Oh, the one with Tyler Seguin is so funny because he's standing there, a woman's about to order a jersey, and she's looking at him. She goes, "Well, that's really good, and so I'm going to buy this, and then I'll wear it at the game, and you'll be wearing it at the game, and we'll both be wearing it at the game." And he's like, "Twinsies." Just like his tone of voice is so funny.
They've showed that one here.
Oh, it's hysterical. So all of these commercials, I think, have just been, they've been fun because there's not many good hockey guy commercials.
Mm-mm. Nope. This is a great example of playing to their strengths. Don't have them read into a camera and try to, like, smolder. Like, that's just not going to happen 9 times out of 10. No. The only person who can handle, like, a ton of different types of hockey player TV commercials is PK Subban, who is a natural.
Oh, yeah.
His Bridgestone tire commercials, just they're love them.
Patrick Taze does a really funny one that plays into his personality a little bit of like being this.
Wait, who?
Jonathan Taze.
Jonathan Taze, okay.
Yeah, who, you know, he's sort of this very esoterical mental player. And there's one with him painting hockey paintings. Like, it's very masterpiece theater looking. that's kind of funny. But, yeah, for the most part, they're not so good. So, good hockey tidbit. I love those commercials. I love them so much because they make me laugh. Yeah. Every time I see one, except for Patrick Kane's, but screw that guy.
Yeah.
All right. Good episode. This was fun.
Yes, it was.
I miss talking hockey with you. We should talk hockey every day.
I agree. No argument here.
We don't have to record it every day. We should just talk about it every day.
Not everything has to be a podcast. People keep repeating this to me. I'm still not sure I believe it.
No, it's a lie. Don't believe it. Well, you have been listening to Beginner's Puck. And remember, hockey is for everyone, especially for you.
Beginner's Puck is a Castria production for the Incomparable Network. Our catchy theme tune is Ephemeral by Sunspot. Have a hockey question you'd like us to discuss on an upcoming episode? Reach out to us on Twitter at beginnerspuck or email us at beginnerspuck@gmail.com. And you can find all of our great show notes at theincomparable.com/puck.